So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we begin the show by talking about a new book from Jane Hamilton. It's just out. In fact, today's the day. Today's the launch. It's called The Excellent Lombards, and I just finished it, as a matter of fact, and really, really enjoyed it. So I'm happy to have her back to talk with us again about that book, maybe some of her other books, but also some of the content of the book. It's really an interesting story, and I'm going to let her tell you about it. But I hope you'll join in as we move along today with your own questions or comments. 1-800-642-1234, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We would certainly love to hear from you. And Jane Hamilton, welcome back. It's been a long time.
It's been a very long time. We meet like this about every 7 years.
I know. Oh, well, you haven't aged a bit.
Oh. That's mostly because we've done our interviews by phone throughout
most
the years.
Most of them are. That's exactly right. Well, here we are. And it has been quite a few. The reason it's been a while is you haven't written. This is a book, a novel that been a while in coming, I think.
Well, that's true. And I was writing very badly. I wrote several novels that did not work out, which is a very shattering thing to continue doing, to be writing very bad books.
Oh! and there's really, you can't figure out why?
Well, for me, and it's not the same for everybody, I'm sure, but I don't know what I've made until I've made it. And so I really have to write the book before I know how terrible it is. my agent said to me several years ago, she said, "You have to stop doing this. This just isn't good for you." And I said, I am aware of that.
Well, you certainly have turned the corner again.
Well, it actually takes a lot of time to write a short book, and this book is a relatively short book.
Yeah.
I could have written an epic that had many generations involved, but I wanted to write, you know, a poem rather than an epic.
Well, it's one of the things, I got to the end and I thought, oh, no, it's the end. It can't be the end. We need to go further here.
Well, perhaps someday Mary Frances will have another volume. I mean, I don't know, but I was aware that I was concerned with a very limited amount of time, and that I wasn't going to take her into her 20s. That it was going to end when she was about 17.
Yeah. So. Well, talk about the book.
I was very kind of obsessed with the idea of succession on a family farm, which I happen to live on a family farm, and the very vexed questions of who gets to stay, who stays but doesn't want to stay, who, for whatever reason, has to leave. And I put all of those vexed questions in the character in the body of a girl named Mary Frances Lombard, who is part of a family orchard, and she loves her family so much. She wants time not to pass. She wants to be able to carry on the orchard with her brother in the event that time does pass. And she just she's demented really by love for the whole place and the situation. So in some ways, it's a very simple narrative about time passing and who gets to, as Laurie Moore wrote, who runs the frog hospital.
Well, I loved how you you're able to write about somebody, I think, writing about themselves as a younger person. I grew up on a farm. And so one of the things I really enjoyed, there were many, many moments in the book where I thought, that is exactly right. That is exactly the way it happened on the farm.
Well, I certainly could not have written this book if I hadn't spent my adult life living on a farm.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was, one of my business associates several years ago said, you know, I don't know why you don't write a memoir about your farm. And I'm not interested in writing memoir ever. And to me, the joy of fiction is starting from a point of departure that has, you know, various groundings in perhaps real life, and then spinning something that has nothing to do with the thing at hand, and just mixing it all up. And that, to me, is such a mystery and a pleasure. So,
Well, you hit the nail on. I tell you, you did a wonderful job with it. Jane Hamilton, our guest today, author of the latest book, The Excellent Lombards. Great to have her with us, and I'm going to shill the book a little bit because I really enjoyed it a lot. I hope a lot of people read it. So I hope you read it. I hope you take a look at it. The number to call with your own comments, maybe about the book, maybe about family succession, maybe about an apple orchard. Give us a call. She's an expert on all these things. She's rolling her eyes. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mealer Show. I'd love to hear from you. And really, you know, I went online. I have some friends who are going through this whole succession business, and it is not. They would like to keep the farm in the family, and there's several family members involved, several children involved, and some of them could, you know, probably don't want to live on the farm or be on the farm, and one or two maybe do.
It's so complicated, and the business of running the farm itself is so all-consuming, but the business of figuring out succession is also all-consuming. And so for the partners or the farmer who are trying to figure it out, as well as keep the thing going, I can see the temptation really to just run the thing into the ground and let the heirs figure it out, because you're just too busy and exhausted to do the extremely vexing and complicated work. And also, the matter of timing is so critical. You want whoever is going to take it over to be at the stage of life where they've really made the decision, and they're old enough to make the devotion.
Yeah.
So they've sort of lived their life, and they also have the skills to take over the farm. They're young enough to do so. And it has to be at the point where the farmer himself is ready to give it over. You have to understand tax code. I understand at the university there are courses on the subject, and mm-hmm. I understand why a whole semester or a year could be devoted to the subject.
You know, I went online just for fun, and I Googled.
Just for fun? Really? You went online just for fun? Wow, Larry.
I was thinking about passing. I typed in passing the farm from one generation to the next. There were 1,800,000 pieces.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my aching back.
And you know what? You know what? All that information out there, and still, I mean, you can write about it, but you have to really kind of live it to understand the dynamics.
Well, that is true. And there's so many little details that are so crucial. For example, the Dane County Farmers Market. If you are a farmer and you've had a stall there, in order to pass your stall down to your heirs, your heir has to have a vested financial interest in the farm for 7 years before the permit will pass to that heir. Therefore, if you're 68 years old, you better hurry up and get on the stick and figure out what person can have that vested share, so that when you're 75, or I haven't done the math properly, but whatever, that person will be able to, if the market is a huge part of your business. And sometimes for farmers here, it really is. It's an enormous part of their life, their family culture. I mean, we've been coming to the farmers market with my husband, and is part of the Ela Orchard from Rochester, Wisconsin. But I think it's now over 40 years, you know.
Oh,
so
that's
we've seen generations now pass through that market, and it's been the most wonderful thing for all of us. So, you know, the idea of losing that permit is a sadness if we don't get it together.
Oh, well, you're young enough yet, at least. You've still got time. time. You still have time. Well, it's no wonder you write so well about an orchard and I love your description of buildings.
I mean, outbuildings are a big feature of any farm, as any teenager who has grown up on a farm will probably tell you.
I could just picture those. I could smell the smells. You do such a nice job of explaining and talking about those buildings and about what goes on a farm.
Thank you, Larry.
I
have to say there's a little paragraph about blossom time, and I worked on that paragraph for such a long time because to get at the bliss and the beauty that is apple blossom time is, I wanted to...
Can you read that? Do you have that?
Sure.
Let's talk amongst yourselves. Yeah, while you're looking for that, I'm going to remind everybody, Jane Hamilton, our guest today, she is the author of many books, including The Book of Ruth, A Map of the World, Oprah Book Club Selections, and this one is called The Excellent Lombards. And you can join in, I hope you will, at 1-800-642-1234. What are your memories of the farm, if you have any? What are your thoughts on succession, perhaps? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Just to let you know, at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will be talking with a reporter who's been reviewing the Panama Papers. That at 1 o'clock. Right now, visiting with Jane Hamilton about her latest book, titled The Excellent Lombards. And again, join in with your own questions, comments, experiences to share at 1-800-642-1234. And Jane, you have a paragraph. Explain now. Give us the background of this.
Mary Frances, who's the narrator, and her brother William have grown up on an apple orchard, and this is just what happens when the apple orchard is in full blossom. On blossom day, my mother always let William and me stay home from school. We were sent from the house in the morning with a basket of necessities and told not to return until 3:30, the hours of the official school day. If the sky was softly blue and the sun's radiance everywhere, no dark hole in which to hide, and the air still, nothing in it but bees working, blossom to blossom to blossom, the orchard lit with a snowy brilliance, and the grass plush and shiny, every green blade brimming with light, and here and there a carpet of violets and swaths of beaming dandelions, then you yourself, you were dazed. You were bumbly and drunk, too. A once-a-year festivity.
Oh, it's a wonderful paragraph. And you spent a little time on that one.
Well, I did, because, you don't want to be too over the top, and yet it is over the top. The thing itself is over the top.
Mm. You're right. You're absolutely right. Well, you've got Mary Frankie. I keep thinking Frankie all the time. And William, they're interesting parents they had.
They have a farmer father and a librarian mother, and both are have their own ways of being and agendas, of course. You know, when I was thinking about this book, I was looking at the world of farms, and there was actually a BBC reality show about succession, and kind of the gist of those shows were that the men tended to be the landowners, and so there the wives were, but it was the farm wives who tended to manipulate the succession issue. They were working behind the scenes, sometimes with each other, sometimes against each other, to make the thing they wished happen.
And a little of that, I guess, goes on in the book.
That's true. The mothers do want their children to kind of get out of Dodge and go to college and have a life away from it.
Yeah. Christy in Coon Valley, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, Larry. Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
Well, I was really, thank you for having the show, Jane. I enjoyed your book of Ruth, too.
Thank you.
From Maryland, Rising Sun, Maryland, the state, and we had a farm that was built in the early 1800s. And my cousin and I, she was much older, we were standing in the back garden, and this was a 500-acre farm, beautiful. And she basically, we were burning muskmelons, and she said, you can get married or you can have the farm. And I was devastated, you know, and I ended up getting married, moving to Wisconsin. And I still can't get up the lane. I'll try to go and visit, but it's just still so emotional for me to even start up the lane to see the house. The house is out of the family now. She was the last one on the farm. And so, but, Jane, what you said just a few seconds ago, that the financial part of it, and I was 24 years old, and this place was big, and it was...
Yeah.
And I hadn't thought about that, so thank you. I think that has put a new perspective on it, on a personal level for me. So,
Larry and I are both sitting here with our mouths literally hanging open. That's I have goose flesh on my legs. I'm sorry that the farm couldn't go on, and I also think that perhaps it's good that you didn't have to take on that devotion.
You're right. See that, Jane, you are right. You are right.
It's a remarkable thing to take on, and it's been said by many others that you have to be a king. You are a king and a slave in the same breath.
Yes.
I'm a little speechless, but that was
That's okay. I have a beautiful little hobby farm here in the valley, and so it worked out. But I just want to I just appreciate when you said that. You know, you brought a whole different genre to that discussion, or the thoughts that go through my head once in a while when I see pictures and or family. But so. So thank you.
Thank you for your call. And I also want to say that, I mean, her farm was started in 1780. Yeah. I remember as a college student reading Buddenbrooks by Thomas Mann, which is about a family enterprise. And Thomas Mann makes the point in his conception of a family business that in the third generation, it all goes to hell. So I don't think that's always true, but I think, you know, sustaining something like that is if it happens, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
Christy, thank you.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate it. I very, very much. And I hope you get a chance to take a look at Jane's book. I think it's something you'll like reading. Trisha in Black River Falls, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you. Yeah, I was just it's a great discussion that you're having. I'm going to look forward to reading the book. I work with farmers on the topic of farm succession, and I'm just, you know, I see a lot of the challenges, and now that we're entering in a current economic situation, I see it being an added challenge, especially for those who actually have identified an heir, would like to see them succeed in operating the business. They go through this transition where it's kind of two families at the same time operating the business, and so not only are there a lot of personality and management style issues to work out, but you know, you kind of need to almost expand the business at the same time to be able to support two families economically.
Yeah.
And when commodity prices are not doing very well, that's an added challenge. And so all those dynamics, it's going to be a tough few years here for a lot of families who are trying to make the transition, even if they had worked out personality and management styles. So you're right. It is amazing when it happens, and I tell families all the time who are working at it and are working together that, you know, how remarkable it is.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I remember when we were looking at directives from the county about succession, and one of the points that was very important to try to absorb is that the two generations should not live in the same dwelling.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that brings up, okay, well, where's everybody going to live then?
Yeah.
Anyway, yes, you, it would be, thank you for, I don't mean to take Larry's position here, but thank you for calling that all those points that you brought up are interesting and true, and I wish you that you were on this show, because I am not an expert on succession.
But it's fun to, well, it's, I thank you, Tricia, so much for joining in. And interesting, when I grew up on the farm, on half of the farmhouse, I lived with my mom and dad and my two brothers and my sister, and on the other half, my grandmother and grandfather lived. In the same house.
Uh-huh.
It's not the best, not the best approach, for sure. I mean, there were a lot of all nice people involved there, but it could be a strain.
Yes, it's intense, as the kids say.
Yeah, especially for the, and my experience, especially for mom and grandma.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, Tricia, thank you so much. I want to give Eric a chance to join in, because he may have something along the same lines, and we'll go from there. Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Do similar work in terms of helping families pass their wealth from one generation to the next, not so much farm families per se, but one of the things that I use in that regard, one tool that I found really useful, is something called an ethical will or a legacy letter. And it seems to me that with farm families in particular, given such a rich historical heritage, something like a legacy letter or an ethical will might be a really useful tool to use. And I'm wondering if your guest has had any experience with that.
I do not.
No.
What is an ethical will?
Well, with a traditional will, we pass money in real estate. With an ethical will or legacy letter, we pass our values and notes of appreciation or blessings to the next generation. It's all the stuff that would be hard to put into a traditional legal document.
Wow. I don't know how you'd do that. Well, I guess you could do it. It would be, and it's obviously something that you work with, Eric, but there are so many mixed emotions and mixed feelings and mixed ideas about that whole process that I think it'd be difficult. And furthermore, we still need the legal side of it. Still need that legal side.
You also need cash.
Yeah, cash is the other problem, isn't it? Boy. Now, you haven't been interviewed many times for this book, because today's your first day, but you're tending to see perhaps a trend here that there may be some discussions along the line for
yeah.
you the next.
You know, I didn't really think there was a topic of conversation when I was thinking about the book coming out. You know, it's a book about a girl and her obsessions and the sorrow of time passing. But I see now that there is a topic here.
Well, there is, and I mean it. And if you're sort of someone who's kind of lived with it a little bit, I mean, it as you're reading the lives of Mary and her family, their lives, I mean, it really, you can, I get and identify a little bit with them. And that's a topic that is right up front center.
Well, you know, this is kind of a different topic, but there's a lot in schools now. You know, the little children are supposed to be reading nonfiction rather than fiction. That's supposed to be the focus, because what is fiction? What can fiction really do? But I think about how really I think we learn best what issues are when we are bonded with a character and have sympathy for that character. So I'm just here to say fiction. School teachers, administrators, fiction.
Fiction. Fiction for sure. We have Jane Hamilton as our guest today. She is the author of The Excellent Lombards, having a lot of fun talking with her about the book and some of the issues within the book that are raised within the book. Join in at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Karen and Madison, you're up next. Thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I wanted to say how much I appreciated the call that came from the woman who was told that she could either get married or get the farm, because I thought I was the only person that ever happened to. And the same thing happened to me. I grew up on a farm that I just adored. It was an antique farm. I worked very hard my whole childhood being told I would be given it. But I had a chance to get married in Massachusetts, and my mother said, you have to come back to Wisconsin or you can't have the farm, and you can't get married. And I've never been able to go near the farm again, and I really appreciated hearing the other lady talk about how painful it is. I always talk about how the fact that it only hurts when I breathe, when I think about losing the farm.
Oh.
And I just really appreciate this program, because I was going to avoid it because of the whole topic of farms and succession. But I want to thank the other lady for her courage in calling in and tell her how much I appreciate it.
Thank you, Karen, for your story. But I also, I want to ask if there was a boy child in a family, that question would never be posed. You have to either get married or have the
farm. I know. Yeah. And you have no idea how hard it is to work when you're a little girl and you don't have the upper arm strength and everything. And you work so hard for a dream, and then it's taken away. And honestly, I mean, it was just cruel. So anyway, I just thank you for the program. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm going to be able to face farms with more courage in the future.
Yeah. And I think I think you should read Jane's book too.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And then I want you to shoot me an email and tell me how you feel about it.
Oh, okay.
I would
love
that.
That's an honor, Larry. I listen to you every day and have for 30 years. You're incredible.
Well, thank you. So, Karen, don't forget, when you finish,
I won't.
You shoot me an email. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
For joining in. We have Sam in Houghton, Michigan next. Sam, hi.
Hi there. Hi, Jane. One thing I wanted to call in and address was for those of us who are coming in from the outside. I'm 25 and would love to own a farm, but was not born into a farming family. And I understand there are certain ethical issues or moral issues even with taking over a farm from somebody else, and that they can have that attachment and just how I would deal with that and respecting their what's been so important to them for such a long time.
I think you're, I don't think people who are buying several 100,000-acre farms in Montana care about the past owners. So you are already ahead in terms of your sensitivity. In a legal fact, if you have the cash and you're a buyer and the seller wants to sell, then you don't have to worry about going forward. I don't have the names of these programs, but I know that there are programs that provide counsel for young people like yourselves who want to come in and take over farms, and also there are funds too available. So I don't know, Larry.
Right through the University of Wisconsin-Madison. If you go online there are actually courses, again, that are offered and help that's offered for people specifically who are not from a farm but who want to get into farming, how to do that and actually putting people together. So there is that. And you should probably in Michigan, they have the same. They may have the same thing at the University of Michigan, or probably more likely Michigan State University. But so you might want to look there, but you can certainly look here at UW-Madison as well.
And in fact, there's a real need for people like you who want to have this vocation.
Yeah.
So good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. Larry in Kewaskum, your turn. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I moved up to this area about 10 years ago, and it looks like it used to support just hundreds of small farms that, you know, immigrants that came from the Germanic area in 1848 and after. But there's larger farmers now that are taking, you know, or buying the farms, and they're just letting all these buildings fall over. There's at least a half a dozen of old farm houses, not the barns and the outbuildings, but the houses that are just being left to fall over. Wouldn't it be better to for somebody to fix those old farmhouses up and rent them out or something?
Well, you know, that's probably one you can't answer, Jane, although
I mean, I could answer it. We have our own falling apart buildings, and it's just a, you know, it's a constant, especially when you are have been on the farm for generations and there are just many things to attend to. And, you know, this is true the world over. I have to say that I was in Italy last year, and there are whole medieval hill towns that are abandoned and the most beautiful, you know, structures,
wow,
walled cities that are, there's nobody living in them, and that's, I want to go fix those too.
And I will say I do have a farm couple that I know that have purchased, it's still a family farm, but they purchased a couple of more farms, and the farm buildings were, homes were in great disarray, and they are actually fixing them, both those farm homes up. And they're going to do exactly what you were asking about, Larry. They're going to rent them out to folks. So it can be done.
It can be done.
Yeah, it definitely can be done. And Joy in Spring Green, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have to say that listening to this conversation, I am very excited about reading this book. Like Tricia, who's called earlier, I work with farm families on discussing and planning farm succession and planning, and would really like to have a conversation with Jane at some point, maybe thinking about how can we use this book in our programming. We end up, this past winter we ended up, UW Extension had about 15 different workshops on farm succession throughout the state, and I would love to think about using fiction as a way to get families to start talking about this.
That's really interesting. That's a lovely idea. I'm coming to Spring Green at some point in the future, in the next month. I don't have the exact date on me, but to the wonderful bookstore in your neighborhood, so perhaps we could
meet. That would be great. I will be going today to Arcadia to get your book to start reading it.
Oh, lovely.
Oh, that's
wonderful.
Thank
you for calling. That's a great idea.
So,
yeah.
Oh, thanks. Thanks very much, Joy, for calling. So you'll be at Spring Green. Where else are you going to be?
Let's see. Boswell's on May 1st and Chicago and various places on the East Coast and West Coast.
Yeah. And tonight, I just want to, before I forget about this, what a wonderful opportunity tonight for people in the Madison area.
Do you want me to say?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Well, I will be at A Room of One's Own with Kevin Henkes and Laura Dronzek, who have collaborated on a book called Waiting for Spring, and also with Dean Robbins, who has written a wonderful picture book about Frederick Douglass and Susan B. Anthony. And we are all friends, and we are celebrating our books together at A Room of One's Own at 6 p.m. And Laura Dronzek is a master baker, and she's been making cookies, and there will be Ela Orchard cider and a sheet cake. Oh. And I think it will. I'm actually very excited about it.
This, what an opportunity to see all of you under one roof at the same time. That does, just doesn't happen very often.
I think it will be fun. A room of one's own. Speaking of Succession, they have survived.
Yes.
So long live A Room of One's Own.
Oh, and prospered.
Yes.
It's wonderful. We have Chris in Wisconsin Dells. Let's go there. Chris has been waiting. Well, hi, Chris.
I have a wonder. Excuse me. My grandparents took care of their parents on two farms in eastern Wisconsin, east of Lake Winnebago. And the old farm was a wonderful, wonderful house with its cream city brick. It is. It's cream mm-hmm. city brick with cathedral windows in it, but it didn't have any electricity or any running water. It had a pump out front and an outhouse out back. And these people, bought it, and they completely, the people that were living in there beforehand were raising pigs and chickens in the house, and so they completely, I'm not making this up.
Oh, they probably may have been from Europe. There are places in Europe.
They were doing this. And so they completely gutted the house out and put electricity in and running water in.
And reworked it and made it into something new. Well, you know what? We're starting to run out of time, so Chris, so I'm going to stop you there. But your book, James, I have to say, when I did, I mentioned at the beginning, I really enjoyed it. And when I got to the end, I thought, oh, no, I want to learn some more about Frankie, so she has to write a sequel to this. She's got her head in her hands right now as I speak. It's such a marvelous book, and I hope it's not 7 more years or 5 more years.
Thank you so much, Larry. Thank you for having me. Thank you for your enthusiasm.
It's wonderful read. Thank you, Jane. Jane Hamilton is the author of the book, The Excellent Lombards, and today's the launch, right?
Right.
So get to your local bookstore, grab a copy, and read it. And something else you can read is a magazine called Our Wisconsin that's been doing very, very well. And coming up next, we're going to talk with Mike Bino, who is editor.